talents. And I'm hoping that I can have three or so guys to be brave readers of some scriptures as we get to them. So the parable of the talents is from Matthew chapter 25. So if you want to go along with the parable as I read it, that'd be awesome. So Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. We all know this parable, probably have read it 100 times or heard it talked about. But it's good to read the word together. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. And then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of the house of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also, who had the 2 talents, came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also, who had received the 1 talent, came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So, one quick note about parables is parables are used to teach us about spiritual truths, spiritual concepts, using images and language that we understand, you know, because we're kind of ignorant. And, you know, if God just came with a technical thing to tell us something, we wouldn't get it. And so we need something easy to grasp, you know, like a story where we have characters that we can understand what they're doing, what they're all about. And when we look at parables, you know, both from the Old Testament prophets and from Jesus, we see that there are lots of different motifs that he uses. You know, there's not... I think there's not a single parable that summarizes all truth for us, all spiritual truth for us. So you have some about sheep going astray and being sought out. And you have others about fathers and sons dealing with each other. And then you have others about bridegrooms. And you have other parables about, like this one, which is a financial servant investment. So this particular parable we're going to talk about what some of the takeaways are. But I think first we need to look at the characters in the parable. So raise your hand, tell me one of the characters in the parable. Who's brave enough to do it? Anybody? Anybody? Mr. Gregory? The master. Who does the master represent in this parable? Jesus. Yes. God, the one who has the property. Another character. Yes? The servant with five talents. Who do you think the servant with five talents represents? No right answer here, just... Yeah, the servants, all the servants represent us. We are the servants in the picture. And we have one that had five talents. We had one with two talents and one with one talent, each according to his ability. Any other characters in this story? The ones they traded with. Yeah, very nice. And there's one more that I think is really cool. The bankers. There are bankers in this story where when the master says, well, the least you could have done was what? Take it to the bank, and they know how to handle your talent. They know what to do with your talent. They could have made something, and that would have been better. So the master, yes, he entrusts his property to these servants. And our attention, I think, is drawn to that last servant, the one with the one talent. And he says some interesting things that tell us a little bit about his attitude that we can learn from. And this is a don't do this kind of parable. Don't do this. So did you catch how the servant with the one talent describes the master? How does he describe the master? A hard man. I knew you were a hard man. And that you gather where you scattered no seed. You reap where you did not sow. I knew you were a hard man. And do you think the master's a hard man? He sounds kind of hard in his judgment of that servant, doesn't he? Do you think that that is a complete picture of the master? That being a hard man sufficiently describes the master? What would give you a clue? What clues are there that being a hard man, that's not enough to describe the master in this parable? Yeah, what does he say to those first two servants? Yeah, he actually uses a pretty cool word. Enter into the joy. Enter into the joy of your master. It's a pretty good master, because he could have just said, great, go trade some more. He didn't do that. He said, well done, come in and enjoy this with me. So that's pretty cool. That's an aspect of the master that either the one talent servant, he either didn't know or didn't want to know, or he's putting up an excuse. Who knows? You know, there are lots of ways to interpret what's going on with that one talent servant and his relationship with the master, but he's clearly ignorant, either accidentally or willfully, about the character of the master. And he just saw how the master treated those other two servants. So he's really without excuse to say, oh, you're a hard guy. No, he has high expectations, like a father. You know, if you're a father, you look at your children and you're like, I can't let them be slothful. In the long run, that's going to injure them. That's going to put them in a terrible position. I cannot let them be slothful. I need to help them, train them, give them opportunities to figure out what's going on and help them with that. So the master is good to these guys. What else? What does he say in verse 25? I knew you were a hard man, so I was afraid. Why is he afraid? you could see maybe he's saying, Master, it's kind of your fault. It's kind of your fault that I didn't do anything with this. You're a hard man, and I was afraid. I wonder if those other two servants were afraid also. The response from the master in verse 26, what does he call him? Wicked and slothful. Now, wicked, that's bad. That's like, I think wicked has something to do with you kind of enjoy the evil. You know, there's a part of you that allows yourself to enjoy, you know, going off the rails. I think wickedness is something like that. Would you guys, does that ring true? That wickedness, you know, the wicked witch, she enjoys being evil. Ha, it's fun. You know, she cackles about it. So wickedness is something like that. And slothful. What is slothful? What does slothful mean? Lazy. Yeah. You know, the Proverbs talk a lot about laziness and slothfulness. And, you know, the Proverbs come from, you know, father to son and say, avoid this, you know. Don't go do that. Don't be like the slothful man because his end is ruin. And so these are pretty tough words to the servant in the story. Don't be wicked. You know, don't enjoy being ignorant about the master. You know, get to know the master so that you can participate ultimately in his success and in his joy. This master, our master God, wants to share his joy with us, which is a joy that I think, and I think you probably feel this way too, above any other joys that we could choose from. You know, we don't understand it fully, but all the other joys that we could experiment with are either extremely temporary or they are like fake friends where we had a good time, but now we're shackled with something that we didn't expect. You know, so the joy that God, our master, has for us, I think, is not like those temporary and burdensome with regret, ultimately. So, yes, verse 27 is where I think is really the point that I want to draw out. Verse 27, you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So, and I think one other point here is that the weeping and gnashing of teeth that Jesus talks about here at the end, we want to avoid that. We want to not be in a place in 5 years from now or 10 years from now or 20 where we look back and say, oh, I ought to have invested. I ought to have worked. I ought to have learned. I ought to have, you know, not been a wicked, slothful servant. I think that's a gnashing of teeth scenario we want to avoid. It's good for Jesus to describe this to us, by the way, to say, look out into the future and, you know, manage what you're doing today in light of the future that you are going to experience. So a couple of takeaways from this that I want to just put out before we go through a couple of other scriptures. What do you think? What's a takeaway, you know, after this very brief discussion of the parable that you would take away from the parable? What is Jesus using the parable to tell us? Anybody? Use the gifts you've been given. Mm-hmm. Good. Anything else?
Each of us have been given gifts.
Each of us have been given gifts. Yes. Very good. Our gifts will be different than other people's. Awesome.
Use your time wisely.
Yep. Anything else?
We're not just stewarding it for our own gain.
We're not just stewarding it for our own gain. Very good. Yeah, it's His property. Yep. Anything else? Any other takeaways? Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you're right. That's awesome. We're not the reward that one person has is not compared with that of the other or the return. And so the master didn't say to the 2-talent guy, how come you didn't make 5 talents? Yeah, so good point. Any other takeaways?
There's a future accountability time for how we manage our gifts. You know, like when a grandparent gives a grandchild a gift like at Christmas, it's not like they check back in a year later and say, you know, how have you used your bicycle?
Yeah.
Use that video game. They just, you know, we take it, run, and do what we want with it. But this is different. There's a future time that we have to be held responsible for what we did.
There's a future time where we will be held accountable. That's kind of a frightening thing, isn't it? But that's a reality that, you know, it's not a bad reality. For us, it's like, oh my gosh. But, you know, that's one of those things like a goad that pushes the donkey in the right direction. And we need that, guys. Because, you know, there are donkey aspects of us where we have to be pushed sometimes.
Hey, Brent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's an aspect that I didn't really think about until you brought up the aspect of the bankers in this one.
Yeah, so the bankers in our world can be like parents, or I'm saying this back for the tape, parents or elders, the church, mentors, disciplers who can guide, lead the way for people to know how to invest their talents, their gifts. Yes. All good takeaways. Any other takeaways?
You know, it doesn't say this in the text, but I suspect that his slothfulness and his fear were first, and that led to wickedness. I think if we give in to laziness, give in to fear of man, then there are really bad things coming ahead.
Yes. So the slothfulness and wickedness were first. I think you're right. One thing that I've discovered through my own personal failures is that if we don't want to do something, we can generate an unlimited number of excuses and ways to blame the world around us or somebody else. You know, mom and dad should have done this. My friend in high school shouldn't have done that. You know, just it really has to do with, you know, if we're unrepentant, then we can just come up with all kinds of seemingly legitimate excuses to not do what we're supposed to do. Any other takeaways? Good talk, guys. Here was the set of takeaways that I had, pretty much overlapping with all the things that you guys said. Avoid idleness. Develop a proper fear of God, which is kind of like developing a proper faith in God. So it's like it's right to be afraid of the master, but fear doesn't complete the picture. The picture, it's like when you go to the beach. You should fear the ocean. You should fear what's in the ocean. But that doesn't mean you don't go in the ocean. It's a respectful kind of, here's what I'm dealing with. I'm not the master of this situation entirely. So the fear that we have of God needs to be developed so that it's proper and not one that, you know, we can use as an excuse to not obey or seek out his shepherding. Another point was we invest for God's glory. You guys said that one. Manage today the best you can. And by the way, some of us manage better than others. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. And Jeff, I think your point was very much along those lines. Learning to manage better, you know. The other thing was get help. You know, what if this one talent servant had gone to the bankers? Well, that would have been a better situation for the master. What if he had gone to the other servants and said, how are you doing this? Can I just come along with you? Can you take my talent also, you know, and invest that? And maybe, you know, maybe I'll learn some along the way and we won't come back with, you know, a net gain of zero. So, and then the other thing is, and this is one that I really want to drive home among us today, is give help. The purpose of this is not to evaluate the character of the servants, but to give a warning, paint a picture for us to, you know, imagine ourselves in and figure out what is the right way to go. If the attention were on the other two servants who actually made a return, it might say to us, now you guys, go seek out those servants who don't know what they're doing. It's also to God's glory if you go seek them out and try to bring them on board so that the masters, so that there's not one, weak link in the chain that your master has put together. So, you know, that's not the point of the parable, but it is something that we can learn from. And again, I think that's what Jeff's point was. So thank you for bringing that up. I want to read together a handful of scriptures just to sort of solidify this idea of, you know, investing and what kinds of things to seek out so that we can, you know, if we're a one-talent servant, we can become a two-talent servant, and, you know, and on and on. Because I think God is glorified as we seek that out. And there's a joy that we actually do enter into, like today. It's not only for some future time. There's a joy. I think every elder, every parent probably would see, any leader, if you've successfully led something, there's an exhilarating joy that happens when you see that happening. So, can I have three readers? Raise your hand if you're willing to read for the group. Yes. Yes. One more. John. Yes. Okay, so Zach, how about you read for us Matthew 6:9? You go ahead and find it. David, would you read for us Matthew 22:38-40? And then John, if you would read Matthew 5:14-16. So, fire.
Pray then like this: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Hallowed be thy name. Yeah. So, I brought that one out just because I think it's really awesome. A lot of what Jesus does is he doesn't just tell us how to do stuff. He puts something out in front, like, you know, if you were plowing a field, you would want it to be straight, and you have something out there that you're aiming for. And as you aim for it, you know, and that's what you're watching, it's like naturally things align under that to go in that direction. And Jesus, by saying, pray then in this way, hallowed be thy name, I think he's saying, make your course be one that increases God's good reputation around the world, you know, or at least in the part of the world that you are in. That hallowed be thy name. That's a, you know, may the reverence for your name increase. It's a magnification. It's a spreading out. So if we line up what we're doing under that theme, then we're, you know, our plowing is going to get straighter and straighter. So, you know, investing in God's glory, I think, is under that umbrella. So, David, go ahead and read that Matthew passage, please.
This is the great and first commandment, and the second is like it: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets.
Can you read 37? Because I think I cut you off.
And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep. So the first and greatest commandment, love the Lord with your heart, soul, mind. I think other gospels add strength. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. And then what was that last bit?
On these two commandments depend on the law and the prophets.
On these two commandments depend the law and the prophets. So you could summarize the Old Testament, what God's expectations and his commands were, into these things. This is boiling down into the spirit of the law for us as foundational. Those still apply. You know, love the Lord with your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. So I'm bringing these out just to be guiding principles, sort of foundational. How do I go about acquiring the ability to not be a wicked and slothful servant? I think these are helpful guiding principles. And John, Matthew 5.
Light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may
Excellent. Okay. Let your light shine. I'm going to skip down to one more. I need another reader. One more reader. One more brave reader. Brave reader. Okay. Yes. 1 Timothy 3, 1 to 4. This is the set of requirements that Paul puts forth for elders or overseers. And I think it's a good list of, hey, this is some stuff that I could grow in to become a better investor in God's glory and enter into His joy. So as you hear Todd read this list, just think of that. These are some things that I could grow in, and it would be good. Yeah, 1 Timothy 3, 1 to 4. So maybe going out and getting a wife if you don't have one. That might be a little hard to go do. That maybe isn't the best way to start for, you know, doubling your capability. But what is good would be above reproach, you know. Watch yourself. Watch how you're presenting yourself, how you're presenting the gospel, how you're presenting truth. You know, is there meekness? Is there wisdom? Sober-minded. What does that mean? Sober-minded means you're maintaining, you know, clarity and not being thrown about by different kinds of ideas or temptations or lusts or whatever. Self-controlled, obviously good. Respectable, hospitable, able to teach. Not a drunkard, not violent but gentle. Not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. Manage your household well. That is huge. Managing your household is huge. These are hard things. This is not, it makes total sense why Paul would say, look for people who are doing this because they've accomplished a lot. They've accomplished a lot already. If you're looking for things to grow in, that's a good set of things to grow in. what I'd like to say is we have a lot of talent in our fellowship, among the men, among the fellowship at large, and a lot of skill, a lot of maturity. I think it would be good to consider, and this is actually an assignment, you know, spend some time thinking about this. What kinds of things could we put our efforts to together to hallow God's name in like practical works? I'm not asking for answers now, but I think that's part of the mindset that for this year, you know, as political things are happening and social things are happening, that we might be able to come up with some really good ideas to invest something and get something times one, two, or three back. Not financially, but in terms of God's glory, you know, other people in our community who have needs that we could spend, let's say, 3 hours on a Saturday and really knock out some problems that, you know, widows have or people who live alone have, things like this. So if we're thinking about that together, if that's part of what we have in mind, you know, sort of collectively, I think some really cool things are going to pop out that at the end of 2021, we're going to be like, wow, so glad we did that. So glad we took on that project. So glad we decided to do this. And anyway, three more scriptures just as boosters. I'm going to read these because they're so awesome. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 12 to 14. Hebrews 12. 12 to 14. This is in a section called Do Not Grow Weary. Therefore, lift your drooping hands. and strengthen your weak knees, and make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Strive for peace with everyone, and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. So strengthening and lifting drooping hands. Okay, 2 Corinthians 10, 3 to 5. 2 Corinthians 10, 3 to 5. For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ. So I love that. We destroy strongholds and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God. And then finally, this one I really love. It's got a sneaky little thing in there. This is from 1 Peter chapter 2. And it's very appropriate to our current situation. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 15. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 15. I'm going to start with 13, just because it's appropriate. Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme, or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and praise those who do good. And then pay attention to this verse. It's awesome. Verse 15, for this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. By doing good, this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. I love that one. So anyway, I think that's, I think the parable of the talents encourages us to level up, basically. Look to level up. Look to people who can help you level up. Look around and see if people around you need leveling up, and work together to do that good that will silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. So thanks for listening, guys. I'll pray for us for a moment. Father, thank you for your word, your careful and persistent work to help us to grow up in the Lord. And thank you for all these brothers. They bring so much to the table, and I pray that over the course of the year, you would help us together to make a lot out of that, all that that's brought to the table. And thank you for this time together. And please bless the rest of our fellowship today in Jesus' name. Amen.